weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Fergal Darcy for the Bank Holiday Entertainment. It is Monday, April 1st. I'm Shane Dawson, and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly are standing by to chat Association Football. We'll have live updates from the ongoing League of Ireland Men's Premier Division fixtures, as well as reviewing a pivotal weekend in the English Premier League. There was drama aplenty in Croke Park as the National League finals played out over the weekend. Brendan Devenny will have his say as Derry, Donegal, Westmeath and Laois triumph. In racing, we'll have reaction from the Easter Festival at Ferry House. And we'll wrap up all of the weekend sports headlines. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200 or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, welcome along to Game On. It is great to have your company of this bank holiday evening. Alan Colley, it's great to be in your company of this bank holiday evening.
The same for yourself, Shane. How are you? Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. Good weekend, good sport-filled weekend.
It's always a good sports-filled weekend, but what I love about the 1st of April, Shane,
yeah,
it's my favourite sporting month of the year, because my two favourite events, bar obviously football, is all year round, which is my number one, but my two favourite sporting events happen in April.
What are they now?
So it's my favourite month always.
What are the two now?
The Masters in 2 weeks,
yeah,
which is just speaks for itself. Yeah. An amazing golf tournament, as everybody knows. And my first love, snooker, the Crucible World Championships.
I knew that.
Kick off a couple of weeks after. So that's why I love when April kicks in, because you have those absolutely mega competitions in terms of the Masters and then the World Championships. And obviously we're into, after that international window that we had last week, we're now into the business end. So we're all aiming towards Champions League finals, Premier League deciders, Championship playoffs, all sorts of stuff.
Europa League final in Dublin.
I love the business end.
Yeah. So proper order. Two proper competitions.
And it always feels like when the 1st of April hits,
getting a bit giddy.
I'm giddy for it.
That's not all the chocolate over Easter.
I don't think I got an Easter egg, actually. I better have a word.
Oh, we need a little soundboard here, a little violin playing. some halftime scores in the League of Ireland. So Etolka Park, it is goalless between Shelburne and Derry City. St. Pat's are 2-0 up at home to Sligo Rovers. Luke Turner with both goals. Waterford Rovers in Waterford, nil all as well. Galway United Bohemians is a 7:45 kickoff. The early kickoff at the Louth Derby, Dundalk nil, Drogheda United nil. Both sides ended with 10 minutes. Did you see the sending off, Luke Heaney?
I didn't see the send off. No.
It was he wasn't last man. He went from behind him, clipped his heels. Listen, I'm not here to give my opinion. I'm here to ask the questions, but it looked a bit harsh. There was a few voices saying it was a bit harsh.
I'll speak to Kevin later on or tomorrow.
Yeah, see what his objective view on it was.
I can already imagine what it is if you're telling me it was a bit harsh.
Archie Davis sent off late on for two yellow cards for Dundalk. I saw a couple of Dundalk fans actually giving out that Zach Johnson, 18-year-old on loan from Sunderland, was the only player to come over to apologise to fans because Dundalk's winning run without a win, I should say, continues. They did score a goal in Etolka Park on Friday, but that was the first goal they scored since the opening round. Actually, Paul Curry was telling me that stat against Rovers. They just cannot buy a goal.
And funny enough, because we covered the first game, the open night, and they played quite well.
Yeah.
They took the lead in Tala and played very well on the night, so it's amazing the turnaround.
Since then,
I don't really get apologising to the fans, Shane.
For a nil-all draw, it's early days. There was a couple of comments on Twitter, but more fill me for
because I listened to the comments. Commentary on my way back up, actually, and by all accounts, Drogheda were in the ascendancy.
Yeah.
That they played quite well. Then when the sending off happened, as you said, it was 20 minutes to go, and the commentators were feeling this was the time for Dundalk to push on, and they did a little bit, but whatever, out really hurting the goalkeeper or causing too many clear-cut chances. It's even Stephen had a bit of a go back, I seen at the local media on Friday night after the match as well.
Getting stuck into the League of Ireland a little bit later, but is that a bit Rafa Benitez-esque when you're starting to reel off all these stats? Is that a manager under pressure and it's showing?
That is 100%, because when you're fighting back like that, Shane, it does show that you are under a bit of pressure. I spoke to Stephen, ironically enough, that first night, and he was very happy with the squad, but everything that he said in that little bit of a rant on Friday, he actually said to me and explained the situation in terms of how slow the ownership, the takeover was happening, which meant they lost all the players in the Irish market, and then by the time the ownership had gone through, they were left with literally having to dip into the UK market, which is what they've done. And that takes time. Now, he wasn't making excuses. He was actually saying, look, I'm happy enough with the squad that's been assembled. But it was very late in the day. Now, that's not, as I say, to make an excuse for Stephen or for Dundalk in the position to find themselves in bottom of the table, which isn't great. Mm. But that's the reality of it as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Three draws, 3 points from their 7 matches, bottom of the table. In the First Division, full-time scores, Cove Ramblers, Longford Town 1-1, Wexford, Cork City 1-1. And the second half has just kicked off in Athlone Town, they lead Treaty United 1-0. Fin Harps lead Bray Wanderers 1-0. Much to the disgust of our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davis, of course, a staunch Bray fan. And UCD lead Kerry at 1-0 as well. We will be chatting football. We will be chatting Gaelic football. But a bit of horse racing. JJ Sleven claimed his second Irish Grand National triumph as Intense Raffles held off any second now to triumph at Ferry House this afternoon.
As they go towards the final fence, it's Intense Raffles, Frontal Assault, Manella Kakuna in any second now. They've only got a fella still a furlong to race, and it's Intense Raffles from on the near side any second now, who's powering down the near side. Intense Raffles is holding him, the 6-year-old from the 12-year-old in the Irish National. Intense Raffles is another one for Tom Gibney and JJ Sleven, trying so hard for history. In second was any second now, and for history in third, Manella Kakuna, who went out on their sword, then came Frontal Assault, History of Fashion, We'll Have One is next, Nick Rocket is behind them, but they couldn't quite overturn the 6-year-old, which was Intense Raffles for JJ Sleven and Tom Gibney, who get another national each.
They most certainly do, and what a result it is for Tom, a second national for him. JJ Sleven, a spare right, because Daryl Jacob broke his collarbone last week. A hard look on Daryl, but this is a huge day for JJ, who endured a very, very tough day on Gold Cup Day in Cheltenham when he got unseated off fast or slow, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. He had this horse in a really good position all the way, Richard. One mistake, fourth last, I think it was, but he kept control of the race. Any second now, he's run a cracker, so is Nick Rocket, History of Fashion, Manila Kakuna, and Frontal Assault. It was a great race to watch, but JJ kept enough in reserves, jumps to second last well, and this horse goes away. I was roaring my head off for any second now in the run to the last. I thought he was coming with a challenge, but the 6-year-old, as you quite rightly said in commentary, just had too many legs for a 12-year-old.
And all credit to Carl Miller, who set the pace here, and yep, the 1-2 got home. For a £7 claimer, he set lovely splits.
He did, 24-25, and he kept it very even. And like running any race, at least the same, once the pace is even, it's not up and down, horses can endure it better, same as athletes can. But what a day it is for Tom Gibney and for JJ Sleven and for Simon Muneer and Isaac Sawade as well, the owners. They had this horse in France, they moved him from France to Tom Gibney after he'd won a couple of chases, and Katie Walsh is down with JJ Sleven to talk through a famous Irish national victory.
JJ, absolutely brilliant. It's not your first time to win this race. You won it on general principle a couple of years ago. Unbelievable.
Yeah, some magic. Let's not forget Darl. He's watched at home, and no, this would be tough to take for him. But look, I've been lucky to pick up the ride, and I'm very fortunate.
Brilliant for Thomas Gibney. Talk us through it. He looks like an absolutely super jumper and a dream ride.
Yeah, great ride. Look, I called up to Tom during the week and spoke to Darl, and Tom said to me, I won't tell too many people this, but I think he'll win. And he was right.
I know you say it's unfair on Daryl, and I understand that, but this is the name of the game, and this happens. I mean, you were lucky in the Gold Cup yourself a couple of weeks ago. You got a fall. You delivered here today to win a second national. JJ, it's special.
Yeah, look at them. I never thought them sort of things happened to me. Look at, I fell off a horse in the Gold Cup a few weeks ago, and I let a lot of people down then. And here, look at them, lucky to get the chance today.
So massive congratulations to JJ Sleven. Alan, before we take a break, I will be getting your sporting highlight from the weekend. I suspect Jane Mangan's sporting highlight, who was on with us on Friday, might be Spillane's Tower, who put Grand National winning trainer Jimmy Mangan, also Jane's father, back in the big race winner's enclosure after claiming the Willawarm Gold Cup at Ferry House yesterday.
And it's Spillane's Tower to the last who holds the advantage from Tactical Move. Blood Destiny needs to pick up now at the last. Spillane's Tower is over in front from Tactical Move and Blood Destiny, and Tactical Move trying to pick up on the near side. Spillane's Tower is in front, hanging on to the advantage. Tactical Move in second, and as they race up towards the line, it's a welcome back to the top table of national racing for Jimmy Mangan as Spillane's Tower takes a second. Connor Trained, winner of the Willawarm Gold Cup. Tactical Move is second in third. third is Blood Destiny, and fourth is the company sergeant. Zanahir is next, and then flanking manoeuvre. But it goes to number four in your card, Spillane's Tower, owned by JP McManus, bred by Noreen McManus, ridden by Mark Walsh. But the reason you heard everyone at Ferry House this afternoon, Willingham is home, is because the ever popular Jimmy Mangan is the trainer. He mentioned, to use his own words against him in the interview beforehand, if he gets the horse, he might dethrone the king. And that just about sums up what we just saw.
Jimmy Mangan, many congratulations. Okay. This means a lot to you.
Oh, this means everything to us, really, you know. It's a small yard and brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. There should be celebrations tonight in Connor, hopefully. Yeah. He's a horse we always thought a lot of. We were so delighted to see him coming to the yard. I said, what a model of a horse. And thankfully, I trained him.
You trained him well, Jimmy Mangan. Give yourself the...
Well, you're good. Pat Murphy rides him every day, and Chloe Draper there looks after him. And Cara Flynn, and look, I've only a small few, but they're absolutely brilliant, you know. Yeah, yeah.
An award for your wife, Mary, and your sons and your daughter, Jane, working with us today. I say, this is a famous win.
Ah, it's a great, you know, delighted to see Jane doing so well. And, of course, Mary, vital part of the team, naturally enough. You know, she's at home doing up all the jobs and getting the other horses ready for tomorrow down in Cork, you know. So it's all guns blazing, you know, but the few I have, you know. Yeah.
What were your thoughts during the race?
Yeah, I was always happy. I was, you know, he put in one shot and hit one, but other than that, I was happy enough. You know, I was really, because I knew he would find under pressure, you know. Yeah, yeah.
You've already been in the big stage, aimed for the Grand National, but this fella, if God is kind to him, he can go all the way.
Yeah, we do think a lot of him, you know, and as I said before, delighted for McManus is to bring off a big one for them, you know.
It was a special day as well, and an emotional one, because you lost a great friend during the week, in Gertie Murphy.
I did. What a woman. I was so delighted that Jane gave her a great write-up yesterday in the Irish Field. She was a true, true lady, you know.
Yeah. Keep walking and intimating, yeah. But she was a wonderful lady as well. She'd have been very proud of the Mangan.
Oh, my God, I'll tell you one thing. She'd be incredible. She was, you know, she was the head of the Tallow Point to Point. And she'd be out every day, make sure the course was right. She was an incredible lady. She was the town of Tallow will really miss her, you know, because she was involved in everything. And anything she was involved in was a success.
And yeah. Anything that the Bangans are involved in is a success as well. Enjoy this moment from everybody in RTE Racing. They're genuinely thrilled that the Mangans are back at the top table. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done to Dad. Well done to Mam.
There she is. I hope she actually got animated.
I think we should take over here now,
yeah,
Jane.
Yeah, we'll have to really leave your daughter to Zealand. But there's your daughter Jamie as well, yeah. Davey. Look, that was a magic win. We don't have much time. I just think for everybody at home and Conna and Tallow, it can be done. You just need the horse. And Spillane's Tower today was the horse.
Jimmy Mangan seems like one of the most naturally likable men in Ireland, Alan.
He's well, as the phrase goes, you don't lick it off a stone, Shane.
This is very true.
And we love Jane, and we're not just saying that. We do love Jane, and she's so good on the racing coverage and obviously helps us out here as well. Yeah. But then we don't know her dad. And
we might get him on tomorrow. Ruby's back tomorrow with us in Game On, so we might put in a call. Jane Mangan, if you're listening, we might get your old lad on the show tomorrow.
It's like everything, Shane, really. Like we find in the League of Ireland even, there's characters everywhere, but you just have to kind of... to get their moment to shine in the sun. And obviously Jimmy Mangan had his yesterday, and it was a brilliant interview there. And I loved that, what Jane said as well. If you can get the horse, get the ammunition, there's plenty of good trainers out there. I know Willie is the king of them all, but he has plenty of ammunition as well. So if there's other trainers that can get the good horses, it's just, they're just so good. Yeah. Irish horse racing, so good.
Speaking of good horses, just a bit of news. Constitution Hill is back at Nicky Henderson's yard after a colic scare. With any thoughts of a trip to the Punchestown Festival now firmly ruled out? The Seven Barrows handler announced on Sunday that his superstar hurdler had been taken to a veterinarian hospital due to a suspected colic on Wednesday night, describing it as a few traumatic days with the... With Constitution Hill. So hopefully Constitution Hill is on the mend, but news there that it won't be featuring at Punchestown. There is a goal in the League of Ireland, you've alerted me to, Alan. Shamrock Rovers won up Dara Burns,
yeah. So. Got a big goal the other night. He's beginning to hit a bit of form as well. He was excellent in the second half against Bohemians Friday night, and he scored to put them 1-0 up against Waterford.
Okay, Pat's still 2 up, Shells Derry 0-0. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Dundalk Drogheda finished at 0-0 in the earlier kickoff. Before we take a break, Brendan Devaney is standing by to chat Gaelic football. But Alan, I do have to press you for your weekend sporting highlights. Can you narrow it down to one?
I can, actually, yeah. And I suppose yesterday was all about Man City and Arsenal, and we were so looking forward to it. Yeah. But as we now know, it never really ignited into the match we wanted it to be. But the match before that was Liverpool against Brighton, fell a goal behind. But Alexis McAllister's performance, Shane, for anyone that was watching the match, he was absolutely outstanding from start to finish. As good a midfield performance as you'll see. I think he's a brilliant player. He's been a brilliant signing for Liverpool, and he's only going to get better. And his performance yesterday was absolutely outstanding.
Okay, great stuff. That is a very fair sporting highlight. Many people's sporting highlights might have been that Dublin Derry match, so we're going to take a very short 30-second break and then get the thoughts of Brendan Devaney on Gaelic football.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, Brendan Devaney is on the line. Brendan, how are you, sir?
Good, Shane. What about you, lad?
I'm very well. Have you recovered? Have you managed to catch your breath after a bumper weekend of National League action? Obviously, good news for your own Donegal, but I think we do have to start with that Division 1 decider. Penalty shootouts, 5 goals, near 40 points, a red card thrown in as well. Just absolutely frenetic stuff. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, listen, hard to get your head around it. You know, I've recovered from that last night. That was a wee bit late. I probably haven't recovered from that since we were. But listen, it had everything in it. I think the first game obviously took a while to get going, and certainly hit the heights towards the end there. It was a frenetic finish. But then into this match, what was going to happen, Shane? And I haven't heard anybody really talk about this. You got to think Mickey Hart's masterstroke was back in the league game, where he didn't put out his full side, he rested a few players, and they didn't really show Dublin what they were going to do. And I think playing into this game, because everyone was thinking, can Derry even stay with Dublin? Because Dublin just looked like they could obliterate teams. But what Derry did, they went for Dublin from the get-go. I thought they might squeeze and drop off and squeeze and drop off. Their kickouts were brilliant. Their squeeze on the Derry kickouts was awesome as well. And it really laid the template for what was an unbelievable game. Now, that said, Shane, listen, Dublin never went away. You know, it was phenomenal the way they just coming back right to the death. So, yeah, listen, coming down the road, your head was spinning from what just happened. It was, and I'm just thinking for the players, that's how I was feeling. I wonder what it was like to be out in the pitch for that absorbing contest.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for resurrections on Easter Sunday. Brendan, I do want to get more of your thoughts, but let's hear from another Brendan. Brendan Rodgers, a very happy Derry man yesterday.
It's sort of a game that had everything. I suppose we had maybe chances to put the game a wee bit further ahead in the first half, and I suppose the normal time, and let Dublin back into it. Maybe a lot of silly mistakes, and I suppose we would be conscious enough of how we fared last year, and look, we didn't let it slip this time, albeit we went to extra time and penalties. I thought we were a bit more grittier than we had been in previous years, so. Yeah, it was good. It was good.
The
game I had everything.
Yeah, sure. When you consider the fact that you're a Division 4 champions a couple of years ago, now you're Division 1 champions, that's a hell of a leap, isn't it, in a very short space of time?
Yeah, and I suppose we won every division on the way through as well. So, look, it's a good progression of the team, I think. There's maybe 4 or 5 on the panel in total that were actually playing that day. So, it's a big change. There's a lot of changes happening there over the last 5 years. And the personnel have come in have been phenomenal. And, look, a lot of them young boys have won minor All-Irelands and things like that. So they only know one in. And it's good for, I suppose, myself. I'm one of the older hands now to have them about and bring that energy, and it's nice to get more trophies up in Croke Park.
Sure. At one stage, obviously, you're a goal up, they lobbing the ball in, you're thinking it's up for grabs here. I mean, you didn't think they were actually going to put the ball to the back of the net and taking it to extra time. It was a hell of a finish.
Yeah, it was so helter-skelter, and even the last goal at the end, like, I think it was the narrowest of gaps. He got it through into the top corner, and brought that energy back into the crowd again, and makes the penalties so much more exciting. And I suppose a lot of people disagree with the penalties and things like that, but
did you practice them?
No, and I didn't get picked either.
But you'll take it in the end, I suppose. But I mean, obviously, a league title is one thing. It's the first time since 2008. Last time an Ulster team won a league title as well. So, and the four divisions. So progression is going on. But now you've got to take it on to the serious stuff, the championship, and that game against Donegal.
Yeah, big time. And look, we sort of broke the season down into many goals. And the first one was McKenna Cup, and we set out our stall and made it very clear after that we wanted to win the league. And look, we're in that position here now. And I suppose maybe a lot of people over. Read too much into the Dublin game during the league, but we knew that we'd be probably playing them in a league final, so look, we knew we'd get a full team out against them, and likewise them against us. So I suppose the day's to do it, and it's nice to get that Division 1.
Well, obviously enjoy tonight, but there's a lot more work to do, isn't there?
Yeah, we have to move on. Look, Donegal won there today as well, so we're obviously aware there are no slouches either, and the Ulster Championship is so intense as well, and look, we have a lot of work to do in the next 3 to 4 weeks, so okay. We'll be looking forward to it.
Brilliant.
Derry's Brendan Rodgers speaking to our own John Kenny there. Brendan Devaney, when you hear Brendan Rodgers speaking there, and obviously it was such a massive win, even the manner of victory as well. How big a win is that for Derry in the context of looking ahead at the championship?
Yeah, absolutely huge, because you know you're on about, as you said, going through the different divisions and coming up, and you got to get belief that you could go all the way. And if you look at Derry's last two games at Croke Park, you know, how different was this league game last year where they tried to shut Dublin down, and they did in the first half. It was 4-6 to Derry at half time. Really crazy game, and probably the worst compared to all the best we had in football yesterday. Of course, Derry had four goals in the second half, or Dublin's had four goals in the second half and won the match. So they lost that game. Then they go to All Ireland semi final with Kerry again, a game that they probably should have won, and they lose that as well. So you start to think, where can we get a base point? They say we're as good as the top couple of teams, because in my mind, saying definitely Dublin and Derry and Kerry are a good bit ahead of all the rest. So for them to match up against the Kingpins in Croke Park and to get across the line, and to be honest, you know, obviously they were the team in control in many ways in this game, and so many of their players stood up and went that extra mile and really becoming of age. And I suppose you say McAvoy being one of the absolute heroes in that, listen, hitting 2-2. He's been played full back a lot. I think his natural position is half back, but the pace and power of Derry all over the pitch. I think the performance of Lynch and Nets as well was massive, because he came under pressure in various games at Croke Park there previous. So you're seeing this team, I suppose, really kind of come of age. They look like they're very comfortable at what they're doing. And I think in Mickey Hart and Devlin now, they're really people that are in there to take them to the next level. And it's going to take a good team to beat them. And as Brendan was saying there, the no slouches of Donegal will be in. It's a tough prospect. I'm just wondering if Seamus Allan Colley coaching the Dublin boys, their penos, because it looked like I'd made a head of bearing in it.
Allan Colley, were you a man for a penalty?
I was a man for the penalties, yeah, but I scored them. That was the difference.
Allan, while I have your mic open there, there's been a goal in Waterford.
There has a goal, and it's come not what we expected. It's Waterford after equalising, Shane. So once we thought Shamrock Rovers went ahead, we thought they'd go on, kill the game. But at a 65th minute, Robbie McCourt has scored an equaliser for Waterford, 1-1.
Okay, we will be keeping you updated with all the ongoing League of Ireland matches. There is the small matter of Derry and Donegal to look forward to as well. And Donegal are Division 2 League champions. Let's hear the thoughts now of Jim McGuinness.
Actually very happy with most of the performance, you know, 12 points to 8 up there, and we're in a really good position and controlling the ball very well now, but Armagh, you know, they keep on coming back, and we were waiting for that, but you know, they pushed ahead there very late on, so very good response when we were in that situation to kick a couple of points again and go 2 up. So happy with that, I suppose, and a good game for us, a really good game for us, and obviously a lot of young lads there, you know, on the bus for the first time going into Croke Park, and a lot of young lads playing for the first time in Croke Park, so that will hopefully do them the power of good as well in the coming weeks and months.
Sure, bit of shadow boxing maybe in the first half, much more open second half, do you think?
I know, I think so, yeah, and I suppose an awful lot more possessions going in contest, you know, and that always makes it more, I suppose, exciting and more transitional. But yeah, from our point of view, you know, a lot of things positive for us. We came in with an awful lot of injuries, really, so we're delighted, you know, that we had rotation, a lot of rotation in the squad, and still managed to, you know, come out on the right side of the result.
Donegal's Jim McGuinness speaking to John Kenny there. Brendan, Jim mentioned it there. There was a couple of young lads even on the first time on the bus up to Croke Park as well. And when you take Derry's win in terms of operation belief that Mickey Hart is on and how crucial it is to claim silverware for Donegal and their journey and where they are at the moment, how big of a victory is it to actually say, right, we've won something, we've a bit of early bragging rights here, particularly against an Armagh side who needed something under Kieran McGeaney. So that must be big in the context for Donegal.
I would think, saying, yeah, there was something maybe a bit more needed for Armagh, and particularly, you know, McGeaney's in there 10 years and you're on about what big games or silverware. You know, if you critically look at it, there's no doubt the team has evolved, it's got better, you know, and they've produced some big performances, but they never really got across the line in a lot of crucial games. And tactically, how they played the game, you know, I couldn't believe what they were doing in terms of they had height advantage completely over Donegal. And forget Donegal's regular fullback, McCall was injured. So Kieran Moore, who's been unbelievable this year, was in there. Mark Kernan and McColgan McGettigan and around there. But the height advantage, and you know, Ben Creeley and Mackin did come on from the midfield. Mernon and Turbot are two huge men as well, but they never kicked the ball. And Armagh had been kicking the ball in the league. So, you know, it was just hard to fathom what they were doing. It's as if they're holding themselves back. And I just can't figure out, you know, a lot of their most talented forwards on the bench, you know, and I think, why didn't Campbell start or O'Neill, you know, particularly Ryan, if they were able to come in? I just can't get my head around it, you know, and I know Oisin need to come in and contribute as well at that point. Now, they did obviously rally, you know, when Donegal were four up, but, you know, Donegal probably sat on it a wee bit. They had a couple of bad wides just when they were four up. And of course, Armagh rallied. They went a point up, and after that, you had a brilliant point from McCaughan. And then that last score, I think, typified Donegal in terms of their commitment to the game. You know, down maybe four, maybe five of starters that they could be against Derry, but they flooded so many men forward. There actually was a goal on when Aaron Doherty put that over the bar. And at that point, my Donegal hat was like, isn't this brilliant, phenomenal? And my GA analyst hat was going, where the hell is Armagh defence? Mm. I mean, at this point, you've done enough to get the draw. Anything can happen next time because you've unloaded some of your better players, so surely you should get better in extra time. So batten down the hatches. Donegal just swept through them. They almost scored another point after that again. So I just can't figure it out with Armagh. It leaves so many question marks going into the season. Huge support there again for Armagh as well. Like, the whole county really wants to get behind them, but they just can't seem to get across the line in the big games.
Yeah, Austin O'Malley, when he's previewing it on Friday, alluded to that I don't know how many conversations that I've had on air about, oh, they're coming good, and this Armagh team, are they're gelling now, and this is their year. Like, how can they recover in time for championship, or mentally, how drained will they be from another nearly moment?
Yeah, well, they've Down coming up, I suppose. If Down had a good performance against Westmeath, you know, you'd have thought that might be more of a test of there. The way Westmeath dealt with them, I think there's probably issues in there as well. But going into the championship, I think the side that they're on, they'll be thinking they can make a final. And I suppose things can change a lot. You know, it's not to write them off. Certainly, they've got a great backroom team there, and obviously Conor Gilligan has joined it. You know, McKeever and Donaghy in there. So it looks like they're trying to find, see, in different ways to get better. There's no doubt in that. I mean, the signing of O'Donoghue coming in was huge. He thought he's going to help them play attacking football. And then, you know, in comes Conley, who is, you know, the fantastic coach in his own right. So I'm thinking to myself, how did you end up in a kind of hand-pass type game with Donegal, who are the masters of that type of a game? You know, once you drop off Donegal and let them play and run in that, they're going to be the best at that. And that's what they were in many ways yesterday. Donegal, I thought, were absolutely cruise control in that game. As I say, when they went four up, you know, I was like, this Armagh team is just hanging on now. As I say, you always expected something from them. So real head scratcher now going into the championship. But listen, I still think they'll make an Ulster final. When they're there, you know, could this be the big year? I hate they say they won't want to go on the penalties, whatever happens to you.
Are you a fan of penalties, Brendan?
No, listen, I know the game had to be finished, and how else are you going to finish it? Yeah. People talk about shots from 40. It's not really our game in terms of striking the ball on the ground. So it is a kind of strange way. And I realise you have to penalise somebody for being pulled down. I get that there's a penalty taker, but then you have other people then in the background. Do they need to be practising penalties? I guess you do, you know, but maybe shooting from the hands is, people are taking marks at the minute and they're shooting at practice. It's part of the game. That's probably a more sensible way to do it. But listen, the penalties, small, but you'd think of a lottery. But I've noticed that the boys getting really good at them. And then again, what's hampered Armagh was, I think Rafferty was in goals for their penalty shootouts, not an out-and-out goalkeeper. And if you could look at Lynch, particularly back to that final where they lost in penalties, he saved three penalties. And you know, he's really evolving as a goalkeeper. So it's a difficult one. I realise you do have to finish it. And at the minute, I think, you know, just you're going to have to get your five takers and make sure they're practicing away and they're good at it, because, you know, can settle big games, as we've seen.
Yeah, I do want to get your thoughts on Division 3 and 4, but we talk about, I suppose, going into the unknown about how Armagh will react to losing that defeat and dusting themselves down for a championship. For a team like Dublin, who have that experience as well, I'm assuming they won't be too downbeat with losing a final, but perhaps the manner of defeat might affect them?
Yeah, I just think with Dublin, you know, they probably that was a bit of a learning curve for them in terms of a team going at them like that. You know, they probably haven't seen that in a long time. And if you look at Derry's rise up the divisions and the S&C and the fitness and the strength and where they've got to be even in the position to do that, no one else can do that to Dublin. So I think in many ways for Desi, you know, if Dublin had a kind of controlled that game and gone into the championship, they would have been thinking, listen, we've gone up against the top teams in the league and we've beaten them all, beaten Kerry easily. And I know they'd be thinking the league, but they're thinking we have what it takes. I think that's a good reset button for them, even though it came down to penalties. In many ways, Derry were in the ascendancy at both periods of the game. They should have won the match. So I think for Desi, in terms of a league, you know, it'll not bother them if they lost the game. And I think they'll take a lot of learning from that because, you know, not many of the Dublin players kind of had a high level. You know, you look at Conn, didn't score from play. You know, maybe Murphy played well in the back line there. You know, Fenton was steady. But no one really played out of their skin, as we've been seeing. And you'd have to say a lot of that goes down to Derry. So listen, if this was at Celtic Park or something, you'd think, oh, it doesn't matter because once Dublin get to Croke Park. But this was at Croke Park. This was their patch. And Derry came in and was a better side. So I think, you know, that's a good thing as for a manager, I think, going into the championship because, you know, they'll not get the test they need in Leinster, but certainly in the back of their minds, they'll know should they meet Derry down the line, that's how Derry's going to play.
Well, here's hoping they do meet at the sharp end of the championship and there's more bite to it. Alan Colley, before we get Brendan's thoughts on Division 3 and Division 4, there has been another goal in Waterford.
Yeah, another big goal, a captain's goal as well. Pico Lopez has put Shamrock Rovers back in front 2-1.
2-1 to Shamrock Rovers, 20 minutes left, still nil all in Tulka Park, and St Pat's lead Sligo 2-0. Brendan, on Division 3 and Division 4, Westmead defeated Down 2-10 to 13 points, and Leash were big winners over Leitrim 3-14 to 9 points. Were you surprised that they were such one-sided? I suppose Down Westmead was a bit closer than Division 4, but again, they were comfortable winners in the end.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a masterclass in Westmeath of counter-attack and defensive play. You know, it probably obviously didn't hit the heights, but they were weary of, you know, of a Down team was putting up big scores. So they sat in and just really frustrated them. And I thought really Down lost their composure and players were offloading the ball where they should have been shooting and it just seemed to be going against them. And then Westmeath got a fairly fortuitous goal and it just seemed like it wasn't going to be Down's day. They drew, of course, in the league earlier in the season. And in many ways, Clare would be very disappointed they hadn't made there. They had a brilliant season themselves, but probably those three teams were definitely the best three sides in the division. It was very close in the end. But again, you know, there's the chance that Westmeath won't make the All Ireland, and Down are going to have to try and make it the Ulster final as well. So, you know, definitely up at this point, Down were favourites for the match. You know, they had a load of chances, didn't put them away. So again, you got to think learning is the big thing there for these teams. These both want to be in the All-Ireland, but I thought, again, tactically, and I know Jason Sherlock has joined Desi down there, I thought tactically Westmeath were right on it, and if they're going to, I suppose, have a chance at taking any of the big teams, that's your number 140. You have to be tactically set, and if you haven't got the firepower of some of the bigger teams, you've got to be able to defend deep, and they certainly did that.
Final question for you, Brendan. Considering all the drama we had over the weekend, does this put to bed the argument whether we should have league finals or not?
Yeah, listen, I think so. My issue was if a league's a league, and I suppose Alan's in there as well, you know, around, you know, if a top team in the league, let's say, are 4 points ahead of the second team and has beat them well in their league contest, it's a league final then, and that other side beats them by a point. Are they league champions? You know, I suppose in my head, you know, the team who is the best in the league is at the top of it. But listen, don't get me wrong, that was phenomenal. I do get the thing, obviously, Leitrim in particular, Croke Park, massive for them to get down there. I get all that there, and what a game that was. But of course, Shane, you've the best two teams in Ireland, probably best two out of three anyway, playing an absolutely phenomenal game yesterday. Of course, that's going to be brilliant. How much that has got to do with being a league final, I'm not too sure. But obviously for Derry, it was brilliant for them to get across the line and won a title. So listen, we used to have quarters, we used to have semis. They've done away with them all. I think we can hold on to the final, yeah.
I think three of the four leagues, it was who finished first that did go out to win it. Down finished top of Division 3, and of course they were defeated by Westmead. Brendan, actually, sorry, before I let you go, man of the match performance from Jarla Burns, his speech, to have that the passion of a GA president was genuinely heartening to see.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, it was probably a bit disappointing that he didn't get to hand the trophy over to our man at that section. But certainly, listen, I think if anybody was born, you know, to be president of GAA, I mean, Gyarlath, everything about him, you know, and funny, he comes down here to Donegal to the Gaeltacht here, and my wife's family have a B&B in that, and there's just something about him. He just eats, sleeps, and breathes it, and you can see how he's commanded already. All the people he's approached, you know, and the different ways he wants to overhaul and look at it and get in, you know, think tanks and groups, and he's taken in all the most experienced and wisest of the people around him. So it's not as if he's coming in just to have 4 years in presidency, see what happens. I mean, he seems like he was being meticulously planning this for years. And listen, what a brilliant footballer he was as well. Of course, his son playing in Crow Park and that yesterday. So talk about a family absorbed in the GAA. I think he's going to be a brilliant president. Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely sums up the GAA. Brendan Devaney, thank you, and enjoy the continued celebrations of a Division 2 league title, no doubt, with Donegal. We are taking a very short break. Alan Colley is still with us. Stephen Kelly will be joining us as we chat football here on Game on a Bank Holiday special. Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat football. Stephen Kelly is on the line. Alan Colley is still here. We're keeping an eye on the League of Ireland matches ongoing at the moment. Nil all in Tolka Park between Shelburne and Derry. Rovers still leading Waterford 2-1 with 10 minutes left in Waterford. Luke Turner brace has St. Pat's 2-up at home to Sligo Rovers. And earlier today, of course, Dundalk and Drogheda drew nil all. Galway and Bowes kick off at 7:45 in Eamon DC Park. In the First Division, Cove Longford and Wexford Cork City drew 1-1 respectively. Elsewhere, at Lonely, Treaty 1-0, Finn Harpsley, Bray 1-0, and it's 1-1 between UCD and Kerry on the south side of Dublin City. We did chat about League of Ireland. We will chat about League of Ireland a bit more as well, Alan, but Stephen Kelly is on the line. Let us chat a bit about Premier League. And the big one didn't live up to all the hype, Manchester City and Arsenal, Stephen.
I think it was just two teams that kind of nullify each other, isn't it? And I suppose Arsenal going there would be delighted, come away with a point. I think it was an opportunity for him to go and win at the Etihad for the first time in a long time, but with the injuries that City had. But I think coming away, I think Arteta would be delighted that they didn't let City gain more ground on them and gain ground on Liverpool, and keeping them at bay for as long as they could. And I think Arsenal look really strong. Their work rate and their energy is unbelievable. But I think City be happy enough to come through as well with the injuries they have. So it wasn't a great game. Wasn't as entertaining as we all hoped. But it's two great teams going at each other, and they just kind of nullified each other, I think.
Yeah, was in a way you were nearly kind of always going to expect that in some way, Alan, that it was two teams, two managers, just that didn't want to give too much away.
Yeah, I think more so from Arsenal's point of view, the onus is on Man City as the home team, and I know no matter where to go to play, their same style and to dominate games and dominate possession. But I think more so at home against one of your big rivals, the onus is on you. So with Arsenal going there, setting up the way they did, I think they deserve massive credit. To be honest with you, Shane, I know it wasn't a game in terms of the fireworks that we expected and a 2-2 cracker with chances left, right and centre, but I still found it fascinating to watch in terms of the approach of Arteta, the defence, obviously the back four, but he had Jesus and Saka almost being a six at times in a back line, and then they were so narrow in that middle with the narrow three and Havertz literally dropping in on Rodri, and I thought that was brilliant from their point of view because Rodri runs games, and for them to try and obviously pinpoint that and nullify him and not have the influence that he has in every other game, I thought that was brilliant from their point of view. And these are the things that you have to do. If they look back in 9 or 10 weeks' time and they're lifting the league trophy, they'll pinpoint the likes of that game and say, look, we were absolutely magnificent that day. They won't look at a game where they beat Sheffield United 5 or 6-0. They'll be looking at games like that. So I thought from Arsenal's point of view, in terms of their approach, how well they were set up defensively, as Stephen said, their attitude, their approach as well, fighting for every ball. I thought Saliba and Gabriel were absolutely brilliant at the back. So I think overall, I think they deserve massive credit and they should get credit for it, even though the game didn't light up the way we wanted it to.
Well, let's hear from the two gaffers, Mikel Arteta and first Pep Guardiola.
We play against roadblocks sometimes and it's difficult. And guys, Arsenal is an exceptional team, well managed, and the players are really, really, really good. I'm satisfied, I said to the team, so don't be sad, guys, because I know my players and how they behave and what they try, but I give credit, of course, Arsenal, for the way, the many good things they do.
Yeah, it was a really thrilling game, a really tough match, very demanding opponent. They get you in this low block and it's very difficult to get out of that. They drop a lot of players and I think we prevent him the spaces really well. And that's a difficulty. 3 years is the first time they haven't scored at home in 3 years. So that's a really understanding team that that they are. And then the downside is that we have some big situations to score. We didn't make the most out of it, and I think the next step is with the ball to have much more composure, especially in the first phase, to attack better.
The next time any two of the current top three in the Premier League will face each other will be in a pre-season friendly this summer. So all three sides pretty much have reasons to feel pretty happy as well. Arsenal have the benefit of playing one more game at home, one fewer away. City, the advantage of playing their harder fixtures at home, precisely where they would want them. And Liverpool get a 2-point head start. So out of the three sides to come out this weekend, Stephen, you would imagine Liverpool with that 2-point advantage are the happiest?
Oh, yeah. Liverpool staying on top of the table, regardless of what's going on. You know, tough fixture for them as well. And to come out on top, they'd be delighted. I think Liverpool, I think for whatever reason, even myself, I'm still kind of like, oh, I'm not too sure. But they're top of the table and they're still winning games and everything is going for them. They're still missing some big players as well. Like Trent has been so influential for them for so long and he's not there. And you bring in the likes of Bradley, who's just been sensational. I think if you can get Trent back in the time and stick him in the middle of the park or somewhere, the creativity they could create going forward. So you're going, Liverpool, it really is a great, great race. I mean, when I've been looking at the fixtures, you kind of think, the team that they all have to face Spurs, which is not very nice for me. That's all I'm talking here for. But they all have to play Tottenham. I'm like, I wonder if Tottenham are going to be that team that just causes carnage for the rest of the season, because the team they all face and they all will know that there's a game in that one for them, I think.
Can Spurs cause carnage, objectively speaking, Alan?
Yeah, of course they can to any team because of the way they play and the way they attack, especially the likes of Liverpool, who leave themselves so open at times. But I think Liverpool have been unbelievable. I watched the game yesterday as well, and even when they fell behind, they were outstanding. It's the intensity that they play at. That's the amazing thing. We spoke about this a few weeks back with the top three. Obviously, they all have amazing players, the best players in the world, the three teams have, three of the best managers in the world. But the energy and the pace and the intensity that they play at, that's what kills teams. They smother teams. They won't let you out. Brighton never got a minute. They were just relentless in their approach. And even the likes of young Bradley, I thought defensively he had problems yesterday. Dingra gave him a lot of problems down that left hand side. But every time he got the ball, he's just driving forward. I mentioned McAllister earlier in the show. He's been a revelation for them. And he's actually been better since they moved him forward and Endo has gone into that deep lying midfield role. So I know Liverpool are 2 points clear, and obviously I don't know if the bookies have them as favourites at the moment or whatever it is. It's still very tight. I went for Arsenal at the start. I'm still going to stick with Arsenal. I think Arsenal are in an unbelievable position to go on and win a league as well, because defensively they're unbelievable. It's going to be, as we've said for the last 2 or 3 months, it's the best title race that I've ever seen, and it's going to play out as the best title race that we'll ever see. And try and pick the winner out of the three teams, it's phenomenal, the standard.
Would you share Alan's confidence with Arsenal being favourite in his eyes, Stephen Kelly?
I just can't bring myself to say it, even though I've seen them a few times.
And you can't nod your head. Radio doesn't make good that way.
I know. You know what it was? I saw them live. I've seen them live 3 or 4 times, but I saw them against Newcastle a few weeks back after they got beat by Porto in the Champions League. And they were, it was the best team I've seen live for years. I walked away from the Emirates thinking, oh my God, I'm actually scared now. They could win this. Really, they could. They really could. I think they've got it. Everything, and the fact that they went to the Etihad and were probably the better side with better chances on the day. I know City had a few injuries, but not enough to not be still a dominant side. So I think the last few seasons, I think they've learned, and getting Declan Rice on the side, I know he's not always stand out amazing, but what he brings to them is just, I think it's fantastic. And Havertz hit form, yeah, they absolutely could win it. I'm hoping it's City or Liverpool, but they could. I think Arsenal definitely are up there.
Just an update from Inchicore. St. Pat's have scored a third goal, unfortunately for yourself, Alan Colley, being the proud Sligo man. Mason Melia, and there are only a couple of minutes left in that one.
Reality check for the people of Sligo.
Nothing lasts forever, as I was saying on
Ryan
Friday.
High second in the table, and then you go to Dublin and get hammered 3-0.
So a tough bank holiday for Sligo in Inchicore. Still nil all in Tolka Park, and Rovers still leading Waterford 2-1. On that Liverpool match, they defeated Brighton, of course, Stephen. And Danny Welbeck was the scorer, and he was arguably only starting because Joe Pedro was injured, while Evan Ferguson, who had not scored in his previous 22 matches, was on the bench. Yeah. Is that stat something we should be concerned about?
I think every striker, when they go through a phase where they're not scoring goals and the top confidence takes a hit, you should be concerned about it. But he's 19. So I think when you look at it and take a perspective, he's 19 years of age. And I think Brighton have been less consistent as a team this season. So I think that's hindered his performances, the likes of Matoma and Solly Marsh, who, when he was playing really well, those two are linking up so well with him off the wings, coming inside. And they've not been the same. Marsh has been injured, Matoma has been out as well, and I just don't think they've had the same continuity or fluidity from last season, which has hampered him. But once he gets back in, the only thing I'm looking at, right, and I'm genuinely thinking to myself, if you're a top four or top five team, take a punt on him now that he's not playing, because you could get a sensational young footballer that, in the right team with the right players around them, can score a bag full of goals from. He's confident when he gets confidence up. And if in any way, I know that this price tag shouldn't have dropped, but if they'd be likely to sell him now, if you're a Tottenham or your team looking for that central striker, I'd be taking a punt now to think, right, after the season he's had, he's not played as much, he might be looking to get out the door. You come in and play week in, week out for United or Tottenham, and I think he'd be sensational for them.
Yeah. Might a club take a punt, Alan?
Yeah, but what is a punt, or what's his value? Because when people were suggesting after he scored the hat-trick, oh, £100 million player, that was crazy stuff as well. Yeah. So yeah, maybe we've kind of met somewhere in the middle at the reality of where he should be, which is potentially maybe 25, 30 million would it be? Right now, for what he's done in his career, when people were suggesting 80 and 90 million, I thought people were losing their minds. He's obviously an exciting young talent, but here he has gone through months and months now without scoring a goal. So people need to calm down and let him just work it out for himself, I suppose, in terms of the coaching at Brighton as well. If a team did come in for him as well, I still think he should stay and work it out at Brighton and establish himself there, because you could go to a big club and he could find it even harder than he is at a Brighton to try and get a game. So I'd be very, 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 very wary about his next move if I was people looking after him. I think he should stay at Brighton and let him establish himself there before he thinks of anything else, because I felt that was the problem, Shane. People were getting carried away too much talking about Man United and Spurs and 100 million and all this nonsense, and it was absolute nonsense. He was only a kid.
I think many Bows fans were dreaming of the 100 million for the sell-on fee.
They'll only get 2 million now rather than the 10 that we're hoping for.
Stephen, while I have you, Spurs got out of jail.
Yeah, they did. They were a better team. They should have won the game. They had a few chances. The amount of times they hit the post at a crossbar, it's ridiculous. Did you see Sonny hit both posts in one incident, I think, they hit the bar. They got out of jail. They went till the end. But they've not been... It's weird. Since everybody's been back fit, they've not been as good, which is strange, because you kind of think, with Madison back and all these players, key players back involved, Son back from the Asian Cup and stuff, you felt that they were just going to be flying. But it's not been the same level of intensity that they had previous. But I'm hoping that's still going to click. They're still in the hunt, got a game in hand on Villa. And you win that, you get back up in the Champions League position. So our irony is that it's Arsenal in the Champions League, isn't it, that caused them issues. It's Bayern. So that was the one that was causing the problems.
In that hunt for Champions League football, and perhaps it might be a bridge too far now for Manchester United, because Manchester United and general chaos continues, Alan Colley.
Yeah, it is. It's general chaos all year, Shane. You look at the highs of the cup match there a couple of weeks ago against Liverpool, and you're thinking, will that kickstart them now and turn their season around? Obviously looking forward to a semi-final and finish strongly in the league. Then you score an injury time against Brentford, and then you could see 2 or 3 minutes later. It is, and that's been the problem all season. We've spoken about it at length, really, in terms of the inconsistency and how up and down they are. You just don't know what you're going to get. They're so erratic in their performances, individuals as well. It's been such a poor season, if you like, and I would worry for that manager now. I really would, especially with the new ownership. They seem to be assembling things behind the scenes in terms of the right structure with directors of football and all sorts, so I think they will look to bring in their own man. I think he could be for the chop, Ten Hag. Yeah.
Is there any credence in this Gareth Southgate rumour, Stephen Kelly?
I don't know.
Would he be the right man to come in?
I honestly don't know. Gareth Southgate has been a day-to-day managing a football team for such a long time. Like, he's done a great job at England to some extent, but that England team should really win something. Like, the only team in Europe that's close to them squad-wise is France, realistically. That I look at France's squad depth and they've got a ridiculous amount of players, but they've won a World Cup and they probably should have done better in the Euros. And they played in the World Cup final again where they scored three goals and somehow didn't win it. You know what I mean? So France have been getting there. England have a ridiculous amount of talent, especially top end of the pitch. And it's getting stronger with the likes of Bellingham coming through, even Cole Palmer and people like this that are Anthony Gordon, sensational footballers. But he's not really delivered. So, and there was a chance with the home nations. So going into an international, into Man United doesn't seem to fit. And then the whole chat of Gary O'Neill, Wolves, that was so strange. I'm like, why? First of all, why did O'Neill take it? But then if you're bringing O'Neill, you're obviously bringing him in to then in the next little while push him into the manager's job. So for me, that just doesn't bode well for Ten Hag, because if that was a serious rumour and there was any light in that, they were basically bringing his replacements to coach alongside him and then push him out. So yeah, I think Colley's right. I think Ten Hag is for the chop, but Southgate, I just can't imagine him being the one they bring in. I can't see him being the one that's going to compete with the likes of Pep or Arteta or Postecoglou.
Yeah, one to watch.
I think he's a good bit off that as well. I'd agree with Stephen. The only thing that makes me think he may do, I think he'd have the stature and presence for it. He carries himself well, Southgate, but
he'd need to win the Euros, surely, no?
Yeah. Well, he has a relationship with Dan Ashworth as well. That might...
Yeah,
and as I say, they're assembling things behind the scenes. He has a good relationship with him. I think he was involved with the 21s with them and all, and because Dan Ashworth was involved with England then when he got the job back then. So there is a relationship there. But in terms of getting Man United back to obviously what we're talking about, how good the title race is with those three teams, Man United are a million miles off that, and Southgate is a good bit off Klopp, Guardiola and Arteta as well.
To finish off our Premier League chat, Chelsea 2, Burnley 2. The reason I want to mention that is I don't know the last time I could say the two Republic of Ireland internationals scored in the Premier League,
yes,
the same team. Josh Cullen, Dara O'Shea, great to see, Stephen.
No, brilliant to see. I was delighted. Both of them did well in international break as well. Dara O'Shea in the last game was excellent. So he did really well. And just for both of them, go to Stamford Bridge, great place to get goals. Honestly, it's a great atmosphere. And for both of them, Cullen's goal, what a strike, edge of the box, takes it down, volleys in, and then he sets up O'Shea's with the corner as well. So it's brilliant for two Irish players. Listen, I know they're probably not going to be in that league next season. Well, more likely it's not going to happen. But to be getting some goals, making names for themselves, and against, you know, still Chelsea, they're so up and down, but they've still got some quality footballers. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for them. I know, obviously, we had another Irish player score a goal on the wrong end, so not too happy with that with Seamus, but everything is struggling there.
Yeah, a last-minute clanger for
I Seamus. Like O'Shea, I have to say. When you think back to maybe 18 months ago and all the talk was about Nathan Collins and he got his move, and then Amabama Daly as well, there was a lot of big hopes for him. O'Shea was one that was going under the radar a little bit and then went to Burnley. I think if Burnley go down, which I think they will, I think someone might take O'Shea. I think he's had a great season with Burnley, despite the fact that they've struggled.
It's crazy. As an Irish team, I know you don't want to be too defensive-minded, but we have to build a team around defenders. The defenders are our best player currently at the moment. I know we have Evan Ferguson, but we have some really, really good top defenders who are playing at a decent level in the Premier League and probably could play a slightly higher and better clubs. So we have to, as a nation, we have to be focusing on being defensively solid, because we should be able to with what we have at our disposal at the moment.
That back three, I'd imagine, is something for the future then.
Yeah, of course. And out of those three who were all very good, but I actually think if you were to speak or do a survey of people, I'd say not many would have O'Shea at the top. A lot of people might have Nathan Collins at the top, but actually I think Dara O'Shea is the best of the three of them. In everything. In his temperament, in his manner. I think Collins probably has more ability maybe, but I'm not sure if he's getting the best out of that ability, whereas Dara O'Shea, I think you get the best out of him every time he plays.
I was wondering when the last time two Irish men scored in the same Premier League game and it's the first time since Jeff Hendrick and Kieran Clarke scored for Newcastle in a 5-2 loss to Leeds in December 2020. So hat tip to Morley Davis for that's
a good one. Myself and Andy Reid scored in one together at Tottenham against Villa, remember, and Robbie Trevis.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay. On that bombshell.
The same game.
I'll have to look that up to confirm that.
I'm sure Robbie scored that week as well, that day as well. Myself, Reedy, and Robbie. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Very good. Doesn't seem that long ago. Listen, Stephen Kelly, thank you so much for taking the call. I hope you've had a great Easter. Alan, we're not done just yet. League of Ireland.
Full-time in the RSC.
Full-time the RSC. Waterford 1, Shamrock Rovers 2. They're into the 99th minute in Inchicore. St. Pat's still leading Sligo Rovers 3-0. And they're into the final minute of 6 minutes added on in Tolka Park. And Shells are nil all with Derry City. Anytime I look at the screen at LOI TV, seems Derry are in the attack. The Shells holding them out for the time being as well. Just on Shamrock Rovers, because you were working in Tallaght on Friday, which is great to see the record numbers there. It does seem like Rovers are, I was going to say coming of age, but just really piecing together and gelling together nicely now.
The phrase I used after the match, Shane, was just hitting their groove. And it looks like that's exactly what they're doing, because they've gone to the RSC, difficult away match, obviously quick turnaround after the game Friday night. And they've won 2-1 and picked up another 3 points, so they're slowly but surely closing the gap and getting themselves back into that title race. Not that they were ever out of it, but just after the slowish start. And just like that, Shane, they're sitting in third place now, 8 points behind Shelburne. If that game stays nil all, which it looks like it will, and they'll have a game in hand on Shelburne as well. That's against Drogheda, who you would fancy them to beat, so that'll bring them back to 15.
Hey, Rovers bogeys team. Bogeys
yeah,
team,
well, yeah. Kevin won't like me saying that. I'll be in trouble for saying that. But if that brings them back to 15, they're only 5 points behind then. And yeah, even looking at the game the other night and looking at what I've seen so far in the league, I think it's between them and Shelburne now.
Oh no, Alan, far too early to say that.
No, Shane,
nothing lasts forever. Shells have drawn, their unbeaten run continues, nil all, as Damien Duff and Rory Higgins shake hands here on LOI TV. Mightn't have been a great match from what I've seen, perhaps one for the purists, but nil all in Tolka Park. So Shells still lead the League of Ireland Men's Premier Division on 20 points, an 8 point gap over Sligo Rovers. Shamrock Rovers on 12 points as well, but as you mentioned, Alan, Rovers do have that game in hand. Derry City now on 12 points. Galway also with a game in hand on 10 points. They play this evening, so Galway, if they defeat Bowes, could hop into second spot on 13 points. Pats on 10, Waterford, Bowes, Drogheda and Dundalk rooted to the bottom of the table with just 3 points. Briefly this evening, previewing that one, Galway Bowes, how do you say it?
Tough game for Bowes. I thought Bowes, to be fair, Alan Reynolds has a big job on his hands, he knows that obviously going in, but the first half they set up very well against Shamrock Rovers, couple of individual errors then, and they struggled in the second half. Rovers quality took over, but tonight's a difficult game. Galway went to Derry on Friday and beat them, sort of momentum going into that, and we were in Terryland a couple of weeks back for the Shamrock Rovers game, and they gave Shamrock Rovers a proper match. Tight little pitch, narrow pitch, suits Galway. They're a very compact, organised team, dogged, as you'd expect. And that'll be a tough night for Bowes. I think Galway could beat them.
Okay. Will that happen? We will see later this evening as they just get the first division.
And Shelburne will be fighting it out, so don't be worrying about that.
I have to
just sit back and enjoy it.
I have to play it down.
Just sit back and enjoy it.
It's an unusual feeling. I don't know how to enjoy.
That's great to see them back on top. It's absolutely brilliant.
It is, for now. 8 point lead. Tolka Park is rocking.
Sounds amazing, 8 point lead, doesn't it? then he said, but we've only played 6 matches. Yeah.
Finish on the first division results.
Normally you have an 8 point lead after 29 matches or something.
We'll take it. Cove Longford 1-1, Wexford Cork 1-1, Athlone defeated Treaty United 1-0, Finn Harps defeated Bray 2-0, and UCD Kerry finished 1-0. Alan Colley, thank you very much for filling me with false hope about the League of Ireland this Bank Holiday Monday.
I only preach the truth, Finn, don't worry. Shelburne will be thereabouts, believe me.
Here's hope. Massive thank you to Laura Lee Davis and indeed Ronan Lawler. Stay tuned to 2FM because the brilliant Dermot O'Brien has some cracking music on your way to continue the entertainment here on 2FM of an Easter Monday. Game On is back tomorrow. Myself and Ruby Walsh from 6 p.m. From all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.